Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the Women's Podcast. I'm Roisin Ingle, and if this is your first time listening, or you just recently started putting us in your ears, thank you very much. You can send us old school messages on email, thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com, or you can get in touch with us at social media at IT Women's Podcast. If there's anything you want to tell us about this episode or anything you'd like us to cover in the future, we love hearing from you. Now, we're nearly at the end of 2023. A lot has happened, and this is our annual review of the year episode. So we are looking back at the good, the bad, and the ugly of 2023. And of course, the stories that particularly affected women in Ireland and elsewhere. As I said, a lot happened, and we won't get to all of those happenings. But here are a few snippets of 2023 to give you an idea.
The United Nations says women and children have suffered the most in Israel's relentless bombardment. Combined, they make up nearly 70% of the dead.
Women across Iceland have staged a 24-hour strike demanding gender equality. Now, it disrupted much of society, everything from schools to banks.
Are you ready for it?
We're ready for it.
The 2023 Time Person of the Year is Taylor Swift.
Okay, Taylor Swift and...
Today, 33-year-old Josef Puszka was found guilty of murder after 13 days of evidence and more than 60 witnesses.
Irish singer Sinead O'Connor has died. Her biggest hit was Nothing Compares to You, and nothing much compared to that fabulous song.
There were emotional scenes as the Irish team arrived at Sydney Airport today on the eve of their historic match against Australia. Vera's Green.
Yes, that was certainly a very busy and eventful year. And around the table to discuss all of this, or at least some of it anyway, is Sunday Times columnist and broadcaster Alison O'Connor and Maynooth University academic and best-selling author of her brilliant memoir, Poor, Katrina O'Sullivan. We began this episode with a little personal appraisal of the year that was 2023. So Alison, starting with you, you got a new job, which is always an interesting thing.
I did. It's the same. I'm doing the same thing, but for a different publication. And I'm working now for the Sunday Times. And I suppose it's interesting at my age, at 53, there was a big temptation to stay. I had worked for many years very happily in the Irish Examiner doing a column. And in the beginning kind of thought, well, why would I? But then I thought, well, why wouldn't I? And maybe I need to and give myself a kick up the bum. And I'm very glad that I did.
Excellent. So it's working out well?
It certainly is working out well for me. No complaints.
So a good 2023, you would say.
In that, work-wise, absolutely a good 2023. And that change generally, I think, is good. If you have any temptation at all, I think, to change, it's always worth sitting back and looking at that and generally maybe going for it.
Okay, well, that's good wisdom to start off this review of the year. And Katrina O'Sullivan, big year for you, published your first novel, which won 2 awards. Mm-hmm. And it's just been really busy for you in every way and in a great way.
Yeah, so, yeah, my memoir was published 29 weeks ago. It's been in the charts. It's number one again this week in the nonfiction charts. Really, really weird, but amazing. Like, it's just been a fantastic year. I was so nervous at the start of the year on how my story would be seen or perceived. And it's just been a lovely experience. Very busy. I'm really tired and ready for a break. But yeah, it's been fantastic. Brilliant. So exciting.
Yeah, well, we had you on the podcast talking about it. And I've seen you on so many different media outlets now, and you seem to be thriving in it. And I think your message is so important, and it's really getting an audience, which is wonderful. So everyone read Poor by Katrina O'Sullivan.
Yeah, can I just interject for a moment to say that it is a magnificent book, but the number of times during the year that other women have said to me, have you read Katrina O'Sullivan's book? Or did you hear Katrina O'Sullivan on X, Y, or Z? So it's really broken through, but I think that's because of what you had, what you wrote and what you have to say. You know, it really resonates with people.
I think that's been the nicest piece of it, is the private conversations with women, the messages from women, just, and all different types of women as well, just kind of some just saying, I never thought of things that way, or thank you for being a voice, or just your honesty, even people who can't relate, just the openness. So, and I don't know how to be anything different than actually who I am, so it's like being congratulated for being the person that you are, which is really nice. So it's been
I think that diminishes it slightly in that if you're going all out literally and in public and telling your story in such an honest way, you know, there's real courage in that, you know. I wouldn't diminish that too much now, I have to say.
It's funny though, because, and I love that, you know, I'm not saying it's not courageous, but you don't live in that feeling. You don't feel courageous. Yeah. Like, it's not something where I would wake up and go, I'm courageous today. It's just a choice I made. Like, when I was asked to write my memoir, I was really, really sure that I needed to be totally honest or else not do it. Mm. Because poverty is stark, and the experiences of women in poverty is really stark and harsh. And so, if that's courageous, thank you. Mm. Yeah. It doesn't feel it though, but I really do understand why people say that.
Fair enough. Brilliant. Well, for myself, 2023, I got to spend some time in a couple of really interesting, lovely places. One of was West Cork, Alison, which you know very well, where I got to just hang out in the most stunning countryside. And that very special week of amazing weather, which was incredible.
The month of June was nice.
But it was the best week, so I was very lucky. And also, I got to go for work to Las Vegas to see you two in the Sphere, which was just incredible. So, and then I went to San Francisco after that. So I had an amazing kind of, you know, a time of feeling really privileged and lucky for the job that I do. Imagine being sent over there to write about such a great event and to see a band I absolutely love and I've admired for so long. So yeah, a couple of nice moments for me in the year as well.
And I think though, like you always contribute to my year, Roisin, like with the podcast and the way you advocate for women and showcase stories. Like, there's books I've read because of this podcast, and there's stories that I probably wouldn't have thought about in much detail. So, thank you so much for that, because it means
really
a lot.
Nice. That gives me a lovely warm feeling in my tummy.
It's a brief point that I was making. The listeners can't see, but Katrina's wearing this fabulous
I'll try
glitter. How would I, glittery jacket?
Sequined.
I knew I wasn't doing it justice. But I find it very interesting in the shops at the moment, right? I mean, you could dress yourself, couldn't you, from head to toe at the moment in Demonte sequins glitter. Yeah. I'd say you can get socks, you know, it's hair accessories. Yes. And isn't it interesting? I think it's coming out of COVID. I mean, there's so much awfulness going on at the world, some of which we will go on to talk about, I'm sure. Mm. But that I think even fashion historians will look back and find it really interesting to see that you couldn't, I mean, you walk into any shop anywhere and I'd say you could be decked out in sequins from your knickers out without having to barely turn around. And it cheers me up. I have to say I've indulged.
Brilliant. Well, you did mention awfulness, and I'm afraid we do have to go back from the sequins and glitter to I suppose, the biggest story of the year, really, in a way, which is the Israel-Palestine conflict. And Alison, I'm going to come to you to talk about that. We've spoken briefly on the podcast about how any conflict situation affects women and children in a sort of a huge way, whether it's from the fact that women are pregnant and trying to go to that, hygiene issues, all of that kind of thing. So what are your thoughts about it's a big question, obviously, and it's
absolutely. And I think that this almost sounds like a more selfish way to look at it, but I in terms of even our own psychology and all the stuff that's going on in the world at the moment, and trying to cope with that, if you like, when Russia invaded Ukraine, that was pretty clear cut. We knew where we stood. And then with what happened with Hamas carrying out those appalling raids in Israel, and what has happened since with the bombing, it's all so conflicting. You're trying to hold these various thoughts in your head, and all the while you see what's going on in Gaza. I think it's some sort of records being broken in terms of the number of children and babies. There's premature babies who had to be taken out of their incubators and transferred, and it seems to be the absolute, I mean, it seems as if it couldn't be any more awful. And even as I say that, then I'm conscious that there are these horrendous wars going on in Africa, I saw a tweet from Sally Hayden, the journalist, saying not to forget all of that while you're talking about these other wars. And it's so much to try and get your head around. And I personally feel, with my hat on, I suppose, covering politics, that Ireland has done well, that our government has done well in pushing forward in terms of trying to say that, you know, really this is too much and that Israel needs to pull back, and doing that at an EU level. And I just, it bends my head that other EU leaders, and I know what we clearly cannot forget what happened with the Holocaust and how important Israel is to Jewish people, but that other EU leaders can see what is going on a daily basis and not look for a stronger language. We're only talking about language, stronger language, you know, so that the Israelis will pull back. Mm. I have to say, it has affected me, and I'm sure so many other people, on a very visceral level on a daily basis.
I think that's definitely the case, and why we sort of are starting with that, because it's just permeated everything, and it has affected people in a very deep way. And Sally's right, there are many other things going on, but some, for whatever reason.
I suppose no more than the Ukraine war, it was on the edge of Europe, and Israel isn't that far away either. And I suppose we have always traditionally sided with the Gazans, and I think that I also suppose, when you think we are not in mainland Europe, and what went on during World War II with Jewish people and with the Holocaust, I suppose it's purely by dint of geography, and that we were neutral. Now, there's a whole other story I know there, in terms of even how we did not allow more Jewish people to come here and seek refuge, and did not behave very well at all. But that I think if you're a Central European or a Central European government, maybe you're feeling it differently. I don't know.
Well, closer to home, because we are going through the year, and more recently, actually, I wanted to mention the riots on the 23rd of November, and that terrible, terrible day when that young girl, who's still in ICU in Temple Street, was stabbed, and what happened in our city after that, Katrina. I mean, it was just the most bizarre and horrible day, and the aftermath as well.
I think it's been really hard, actually, to talk about this publicly, because it really polarizes people, like what happened on that night, in terms of, you know, we've heard words like scumbag, and in my, you know, my mammy's group, like knacker has been used to describe the lads and girls who were involved in the behavior and in the riots. It was just really terrifying. Like, what I find really sad is just how unsafe ethnic minorities must feel right now in Ireland, and how welcoming we are as a nation. You know, just myself, having moved here, just because my skin's not brown, it doesn't mean that I haven't felt the difference. And just also, there's so much welcome here in Ireland, and that just makes me feel really sad, just in general, that people just don't feel safe, especially vulnerable people who may have fled war, who may have fled places where they really were struggling to stay alive. So that I hold that thought in my head. But then on the other side, I'm really terrified about what's happening, about the capacity. I know we talk about far-right groups, like, from a person who comes from a working class or an underclass background, like, you don't really understand what that means. But the potential for people who feel underserved in society to be galvanized is there. And I think as a society, we need to be really careful about how we talk about this issue and the way we approach this challenge that we're being faced. I think potentially, we're talking about Conor McGregor running for president, and lots of people are just suggesting that that's not going to happen. But like, then people are not on my social media, where there's thousands of people who are for that. There are thousands of people who come from the community that I lived in, that I worked in, who are absolutely delighted at that idea. Now, I'm not personalising it with him, but what he stands for and the way he talks about certain things, I would be terrified that we would actually move in a direction that we don't want to go. So I do think we need to be really careful in how we talk about people who get involved in the riots, and now how we try to educate groups around, I suppose, migration. Firstly,
the facts, because a lot of misinformation goes around. Alison, you just want to say something?
Yeah, because I think, I mean, I agree with everything that Katrina just said. I mean, if you think Conor McGregor has something like 10 million followers on Twitter, and yes, that sentence, could we have imagined a month ago that sentence and Conor McGregor's mentioning running for president.
Yeah.
It's quite mind-bending. And when you consider that last week there was a motion in the Dáil by the Rural Independent Group on immigration, which was dressed up as, you know, in lots of other things, but really was a dog whistle debate to my mind. But I'm not saying that there shouldn't be, because there are people all over Ireland, particularly, I think, in a way, it's different in the city and the country. In small places in the country where suddenly there have been large numbers of people who have come, or the local hotel is no longer operating as a local hotel, or even community halls and that have been taken over. And these are people who would not consider themselves racist, but are afraid to speak out loud about it, but who need reassurance, or who maybe can't get an appointment with their local GP or the dentist or school places or whatever. So, but it's I realise that it's much easier to say we need to have a responsible debate on this than to have one.
Yeah.
Because it's also, as a government, do you decide, well, we're going to go for an integrated approach, it's going to be multicultural. I don't think the government has come anywhere near that. So far, it's been sort of, let's play nicely here. And I think we saw with the riots and all of that, that it's... that isn't cutting it anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Katrina, one of the stories that you wanted to talk about is very particular to women, and it's about the publicly funded IVF launch, which happened in September.
Yeah.
Tell us about that and why you wanted to talk about it.
I think, okay, I was really excited to hear, like, I've spent my life trying to not get pregnant. I've been very lucky and not being successful at it, obviously having a child at 16. But I personally have never had a struggle with getting pregnant or had to worry about it. It was always the opposite. And the majority of women, I think it is the opposite of that. We spend a lifetime worrying about it, protecting ourselves from children. But there are, like, so when I heard the government were going to fund IVF, I was so delighted. I thought, you know, we're getting free contraception and then the IVF. And then to see the restrictions that were put in place around it, specifically relating to age and specifically relating to weight, really got my goat. Now, I mean, there is evidence to suggest, so the restrictions relate to women who are 40 and 364 days. They anyone over that cannot avail of the option. And also then if your BMI is over 30, which obviously there is evidence to suggest if your BMI is higher, it's harder for IVF to work. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't provide these services to women. And it really, to me, just pointed to the lack of understanding around, I suppose, weight, BMI, health. And the conversation that was publicly had about that afterwards just really made me feel sad about how women, their bodies are talked about, are conditioned by society. There was no conversation about smoking, about alcohol use, about drug use. There's no actual restrictions put in place or actually talked about around them things. But it was just, if you're a bit of a bigger woman and if you're over 40, then you're not entitled. So, like, the hope that this gave in one hand was really taken away. The other issue I have with it is around, like, same-sex couples or single women. They're also not entitled to access. So it really, like, publicly said, we value skinny, married, under 40 couples. Now, under 40 women, and the man can be up to 59. Mm-hmm. And that also has a problem attached to it, because there's lots of research that shows that men, older men who have children, the impact of the child and in longer life and an aged father has consequences, but no one is being restricted around that. There's no conversation. So it really just suggested to me, you know, that we are still being policed in some ways.
Katrina, I presume, just to give from the medical side of it, that there are very good reasons that these things, these restrictions are put in, that they're well researched and founded. I'd imagine that it's not they don't feel like they're policing or trying to be sexist or whatever. But I mean, Katrina's points are very valid, especially the aged father thing. I really think is interesting.
Oh, I mean, as Katrina explains it, there you can see giving with one hand and taking with the other. I had more than a passing knowledge of IVF clinics many years ago, and it struck me so much then and in the intervening years since that assisted reproduction is and I think largely remains by these changes in the milieu of the middle classes.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so expensive. And there's a whole other thing about people. One of the hardest, there's studies been done that one of the hardest things is stopping, so that in a way people who have the money and they can end up spending tens of thousands. I think that politically, this has been signaled for a long time. They've finally done it. I imagine some of those restrictions are simply to do with the limiting budget. You'd hope that it would. And yet a thing that did strike me during the year, and I mean, at this you can say this is just something that somebody said, you know, and it isn't of any monetary value or no help practically to people. But watching Micheál Martin at the Fianna Fáil Ardéis, as the leader of Fianna Fáil and the Tánaiste. And he's in his speech, he just mentioned the first ever dedicated services for women's health being in place, including menopause clinics, free contraception, and he mentioned the state-funded IVF. But I just thought to myself, a Fianna Fáil leader standing up and mentioning them women's issues like that is quite something.
It's big.
Now, you can ridicule that and say, what odds? But it signals change. And the other thing for me is listening to this consent campaign that's on at the moment. Mm. And I am hearing it a lot. Mm. And I do. I know people can say, oh, what difference? But actually, I think those things really do make a difference.
Yeah.
It creates a culture where people kind of, in some way, I think that maybe it, I don't know, is it like I'm hearing it on Radio 1 and places like that, that boring old farts like me are listening to, whether it's getting through on other channels. But I do think it makes it more generally saying like, hey,
mainstream.
In this society, you know, here's how we operate.
Yeah, so my son actually this year, he has to do a consent workshop before he registers for university.
Interesting.
So in all the universities now, they have a consent workshop. And we did it together, actually, because I wanted to see. But it was really good. So I do agree. Like, there are definitely progress in talking about women. Talking about women's issues. But, like, if we look at the stats and the facts of actually who's been able to avail of the IVF, offer, it's only 127 families in inverted commas that have actually been able to avail. In light of, there's six centres and on average there's 400 people being referred every month to the centres, and at the end of, in December 1st, it was only 127 people who actually met the criteria. So like, it's a small thing, but it definitely needs to be broadened.
Yeah.
And also, people, you know, some people can't afford it at all. So like, you have to have had one attempt. So like, even one attempt is really expensive. So there is definitely a class issue in terms of access. And I agree, it's brilliant, but we need to do more.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Alison, I want to come back to you about the domestic violence legislation introduced this year by Helen McAtee, a huge issue, and given that much more impetus by the murder, of course, of Aisling Murphy, whose murderer was convicted this
indeed,
year as well.
And I think we were, that was another under the heading of awful things in 2023, just the idea of her family and her boyfriend sitting through that trial and all that evidence. But I do think that in years to come, you'll hope it'll be a comfort to them that Aisling's legacy will, because I think that it really did galvanise the government and Helen McEntee, the Minister for Justice, who has had a lot of stick, as we know, over the last few weeks arising out of the riots. So basically, it's the legislation passed, I think it was last month, In the middle of the year, the government launched a zero tolerance plan, and we now are going to have a domestic violence agency. And what will be important there is that it will kind of have an overarching view. That what we saw in the wake of Aisling Murphy's murder is how everything was between different departments. Nobody was really in charge. So now this is going to be under one roof. I think they're in the process of appointing a boss. So things like refuges, the services, compliance, all of that. Now, I'm saying all that in a way that, like, this is going to be fabulous,
yeah,
but we're still in hope. And it kind of, the other thing that was a little bit disappointing was because even before the riots, when Helen McEntee was coming under criticism, you know, for issues to do with justice, and people were saying that she was concentrating on sort of, this was internally the softer issues, the hate speech being one of them. But this was kind of a part of that as well, and you did scratch your head and think, my God, you know, because as she said herself during the year, pointed out that a majority of the homicides have a domestic violence motivation in, you know, the homicides in Ireland, and that's, there are so many statistics we could throw out, but that in itself, you know, shows you.
And the thing I hope with the agency, and I know reporting in terms of domestic violence and you know, gender-based violence, it's increased a lot over recent years, but we're still so much underreporting. So hopefully having a specified place for violence against women will actually help women feel safe in reporting. But just to say, like, we've had 18 violent deaths of women since Aisling Murphy has been killed. Like, this is not going away. I know the 25th of November, it's International Day for Elimination of Violence Against Women. Like, we shouldn't have to have a day like that. And I do think Helen McEntee has done a lot. Like, we've seen so much legislation actually come in around protecting women in terms of, like, you know, sharing of videos. So it's been fantastic.
Stalking,
really, really good stuff happening. It's just, I think it's kind of scary that we still have a really high femicide rate in Ireland, one of the highest. And it's something that we don't really talk about a lot. And I definitely think we need to do more and be better.
What's that quote, Mary Cassidy, the former state pathologist, was it? She said you need to be much more concerned, not about the man under your bed, but the man in your bed.
Yeah,
in terms of it happening. We do imagine that it's being out on the streets late at night, you know, all of that. Whereas actually the statistics show it's behind your
hall
door.
And another good thing that's brought in this year is the domestic violence leave in workplaces as well, which is a huge thing. And so that is all very helpful, because that's a thing that many women and men, some men in the workplace, are going through and don't have any way to talk about that or get any respite for that. And that is a really good thing, I think, that at least has been recognised. Let's talk about something slightly more joyful, which is the women's soccer team.
Yay.
This year. What a great success that was. Marred slightly by the whole Vera Powell thing afterwards, but it's amazing to see the women on that world stage, you know.
I think as to being the mother of two daughters who play sport and who love sport, I just thought it was fabulous, you know, how, and I don't think there was quite the appreciation even at the time of how well we really did to get as far as we did and how well we have done since. Now, I do think that the women's team aren't in any way helped by the fact that it's the FAI that is in charge.
That's a whole other
to-do.
And
that the fact that, you know, that it's growing the audience. But I just wanted to take a moment. My two girls play camogie in Dublin with a small club, hurling club called Kevin's. And we were at what you traditionally would have called a dinner dance.
All right.
Back in the day, a few weeks ago. And it was only, I sort of didn't realise it until we got there, that it was celebrating 30 years of camogie. Like, the club is over 100 years old. And it was the most marvellous celebration of the girls and the women in the club.
Great.
The whole night long.
Yeah.
And it also celebrated, we had been the previous Sunday, there had been under 13, under 14, under 16 county finals. I was at two of those. The rest of the family were at three.
I can't see you on the side of a camogie pitch there.
I'll bring you along. There are two consecutive
not
matches.
Not with that lovely blouse on.
Two consecutive matches. And it blew my mind that there were four girls who played in all three games. and one girl who scored in all three games.
Yeah.
And they're just...
Like the work
they
ethic.
They are absolutely phenomenal. And what that team's everything, what it does for girls, my daughter also plays rugby, and to see one of them, just to see what girl, because I didn't really, I know that some, I've asked women this recently, women, other women were involved in team sport growing up. I wasn't. And it is such an important thing. And it just leads me on briefly to one of the things that happened. Again, here's the nuts and bolts of it, that the GAA, the IRFU and the FAI, in terms of getting 40% gender balance, are they getting women? And I mean, I'd like to be able to tell you it all happened very smoothly, but there was an element of dragged kicking and screaming, and that the Minister for Sport, Thomas Byrne, had to say that funding would be cut by 50% if they failed to reach the... And he also went on to say that that funding would be pulled if grounds and facilities weren't equally available to male. I mean, you have a lot of that going on, this where girls' teams are not getting access to dressing rooms or to the good training. And it's kind of...
The Grass Ceiling is a fantastic book. She talks about this. Yeah. So in Camogie particularly, we still have this gendered issue where women's teams are not given the pitch, the men's team, they're not given the kits. So there is definitely still an issue. One of the things that I really hope the women's football team will do will keep girls engaged in sport. So we have this statistic at age 13, girls just stop playing. They disengage. So I'm really, and to be fair on the FAI and Sport Ireland, they have funded this programme recently to really try to get girls to stay engaged. I just think Katie McCabe is just a hero. I mean, she's so talented. And what's interesting, last night in our house, we were watching the women's football and my husband, who's, you know, has played football his whole life, and he would call himself a feminist or a reformed feminist anyway.
Reformed.
And he said to me, that's the talent. This is on par, if not better than the men's game. And like to hear him say that is such a big thing.
My partner Johnny watched every match in the world, not just the Irish ones, and he kept saying, because I'm not really that bothered by football, I watched the women's team, but he was saying he couldn't get over the skills and the standard and the watchability of it. Do you know what I mean? Because you do get some men, unfortunately, saying, oh, I could be bothered with that, or really being horrible about it.
But somebody said to my husband last week, now an older man, who did say, I wouldn't cross the road to watch
exactly
football.
Maybe it's the same taxi driver I met, he said exactly the same thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is really great, and hopefully it continues that way and we continue supporting the women.
Yeah.
I mean, the numbers are just going up. Tala Stadium is always full when the girls are playing.
And to see them in the Aviva for the first time as
brilliant.
Well this year.
And I suppose if it makes it a little bit, I mean, as that night out that we had, it just like, if it's celebrated, that's a part of it too. That it isn't just a slog of where women aren't changing tracksuits at the airport.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not all the negative stories, that there is the celebration of it.
Yeah, and there's sort of celebrities now. I think that Katie McCabe, she's a celebrity. Yeah. She's a big deal. If she's in a room, everyone's looking at her.
I mean, she's amazing.
Katrina, I want to come back to you because you've got a story you want to talk about, which is a bit more international and a bit more pop cultural. Lizzo was sued by her bandmates in 2023. Why did you pick this?
I was just shocked by this whole story. First of all, like she's been accused of fat shaming her staff, which actually, like, it is possible for fat people to fat shame other people.
Of course it is. Yeah.
So like the idea that she couldn't fat shame them was kind of shocking to me. But also, I just feel like, you know, people were waiting to jump on Lizzo, not physically, but like definitely they were waiting. There is a sense for me that a woman who's just that little bit different, who's a little bit out there, who's singing songs that are a bit different, whose body shape is definitely not the celebrated. I just think people were dying to see her fall. And this story gave the perfect opportunity for her. Now, I don't know if she did it or she didn't do it. At the end of the day, like, that's for whoever is investigating to say. But I just, as an observer, was like, isn't it sad that I just think people wanted to see Lizzo fall. And that made me think realistically about, I suppose, the stereotype of who we find acceptable and as a woman in the limelight. So like, you know, someone like Beyonce, I just don't think that would happen if it was Beyonce or somebody else who we really hold up as this woman who's like physically acceptable and behaving, in inverted commas. And to be fair, Lizzo just doesn't behave. So the other thing is, though, it is possible to fat shame someone if you are fat yourself.
Yeah. Like there's internalized fatism. Exactly.
But I don't disagree with anything. I agree with all of what you've said there. But I would say that if as you say, we've no idea of the guilt or innocence of anyone. When I read it at the time, I couldn't make it was very hard to make up your mind.
Yeah.
But But I would disagree with you on this point, that if Lizzo makes a point of saying, you know, that
body positivity is her thing,
and fat shaming is wrong, I would say in that instance you have an obligation
To be impeccable,
to a higher standard, and I go the road with you on the rest of it.
Well, definitely that. But I suppose I was listening in my own household, my children, like before, and like so. My lads, they don't like Lizzo, and she's great music. Even when she did the big show, and she was fantastic, and we sat around and we watched it
in Glastonbury.
The boys were still like,
it because she's fat?
Yeah, it's because she's fat. I know it's because she's fat.
Yeah.
Now
they wouldn't say it.
But it's because she's fat. I like that. I have heard them say she shouldn't be wearing that, and
then when
this story came out, there was and actually like see
okay,
see
yeah,
and
yeah.
so I suppose I'm listening to kind of, yeah. I suppose to other people's talk about how it was justified. Yeah. Now I also worry about that thing about, you know, you can be fallible. Like I talk a lot about class and gender and human rights. But like, my God, like I'm not perfect. Like definitely have a thought sometimes. Even around the riots, I had worry about like speaking. Because I stand for something, it doesn't mean I can't make mistakes in that stand. And I don't know everything. Or I'm not always going to be politically correct. And I think with Lizzo, with whatever happened around this issue, like apparently she told the girls that they'd put on too much weight and they couldn't do the dance moves that they'd done the choreography for. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know if that's fat shaming. Now, forcing them to go to a strip show and use vibrators, that's the other thing that she's accused of, apparently. Yeah. I could see big issues with that. But so I worry about holding people accountable so much to perfection, even if they stand for something, because sometimes there is nuance in everybody. Yeah.
And can I bring in Taylor Swift here? Because I always like to bring her in anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the big things that happened to me in 2023 was managing to buy 4 tickets to a Taylor Swift concert, which is happening.
You kept that
for June, I know. But Taylor Swift was named Time Person of the Year not too long ago. And I was just listening to you talking about Lizzo. I think, yes, I agree with you, especially someone who people are secretly maybe not liking because she's fat. And then when they get a reason to be vocal about it, they jump on it. But I think Taylor Swift is a good example of who has been through a time of being, you know, hated on a lot. You know, when the Kanye West thing happened, and then she had that whole album Reputation. And she sort of has talked about hiding from the world for a year, because any woman, I think, who is being successful and is up there doing an amazing thing, you are guaranteed, much more so than a man, somebody's waiting in the long grass and somebody's going to find a way to pull them down.
And you see, and you even said that, like, Taylor has the advantage of
the supermodel look.
So, yeah, Lizzo is has
a person of colour.
Ethnicity.
Yeah.
And fatness.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so it's almost like it does set the, and so much of it is unconscious bias. I mean, Katrina, you're talking about the Dublin riots. I mean, I found myself, because being at home that night and having about 4 screens in front of me and being so stressed and thinking, is this really the city that I live in?
Yeah.
And I turned into a lock 'em up merchant for the next couple of days, and almost found myself about to say things that I would never.
Absolutely.
You know, that I would consider myself, a bleeding heart liberal.
Yeah.
So I think we all have to, all end up having to check ourselves, don't we?
Definitely. Yeah, it really brought to light the riots with me, actually, how I have like two identities that live internally with me. It's like the middle class part of me that's been experienced so much difference, and then where I come from. Like I would say, if it was 25 years ago, I might have been in with the riots. Like I might have actually been there.
I think you would, Katrina, reading your books, knowing what I know about you,
because,
I think you would have.
But I didn't have the complex, the way, like, so some things, it's just very simple, was very simple then. This is this, they're taking my housing, they're doing this to us. Yeah. Like there was not, I didn't have the capability to consider the nuance of the situation. So I do understand that. Yeah. And in terms of Taylor Swift, I'm delighted that you got your tickets, but they were extortionate.
Oh, ridiculous, I know.
I love her now, I have to say. Like, I love her music.
Thank you.
I love her.
The thing about Taylor Swift becoming Time Person of the Year as well, like, this is a woman who was done dirty by music executives. They took her stuff. Someone who she really didn't like was able to buy her music. She's gone and recorded all her albums again. She has completely done the finger to those
smart,
people.
Smart, savvy.
She says herself, she's not cool. She's not hip. She's not going to be one. She's really hardworking.
Yeah.
She's really creative. She makes those things cool. I mean, I'm so delighted that I have two 14-year-old girls in a world where Taylor Swift is the person. And yes, I know.
I'm not sure would those girls be allowed in your house if they weren't Taylor friends.
I'm actually thinking this is the Taylor Swift show.
We're moving on. Something very sad that happened this year that I think we're all, anybody, and particularly maybe women of a certain age in Ireland, were deeply affected by, and we were on the podcast, is the death of Sinead O'Connor. Mm. And I just wanted to mention it a bit because I think, and I was just thinking about Shane McGowan as well, as just recently dying too, and the funeral was just so incredible down in Nina. I mean, Sinead O'Connor was a woman who, it's funny enough, I have the Dear Gay book, was talking about Gay Byrne recently on the books podcast that we did last week. And Sinead O'Connor changed, I think, Ireland, or helped Irish women to move forward and to express ourselves and to be ourselves in a way I think that not very many other Irish women have done. And I just still feel her loss so keenly. So I thought we might just reflect on it a little bit. I mean, the fact that she's not here with us anymore and that she was such an incredible person.
She was so gifted as a human being, not just as a musician and a singer, but as an activist and someone who was just so brave. When you talk about like me being courageous, I think about her, like she was like real courage. And I don't even think that she had any consideration of the harm that would do to herself in the things that she tackled and the things that she said and just the complete openness of her. I really felt, and like I'm not a big like music fan of Sinead O'Connor. So people were talking about songs and I felt really guilty that I didn't know them at the end of the day. Because
But isn't it amazing that she still had an impact on you though,
massive,
nevertheless?
Yeah.
I think that's the key thing, you see.
And living outside of Ireland as well for a long time, she would have been like an icon in the world. Like, so she would have galvanised people around, you know, the grip of the church and also just her bravery in being like so different as a woman, like just being different, presenting herself differently. So I remember years ago in the UK, like people used to be like, who is this Irish woman? You know, because she was so striking, but so brave. And for me, I obviously the music has come after she's died. But in terms of her impact on strength and courage and capacity to challenge, like she would have impacted me massively. And I think it's so sad that she's gone. But I she does live on in that, in the sense that she did
her
so much for us.
Yeah.
I mean, it is one of those things that it's still hard to believe she's gone, isn't it? You know, and I suppose on a slightly different track, one of the things that, I mean, I concur that she's so, so immensely talented and left herself so vulnerable in so many ways. But it also struck me a lot around the time of her death and many times before it, how much the media did a disservice to her, that quite clearly over decades, and she spoke about this herself, suffered from mental illness. And so much advantage was taken of that. And the amount of times even that the reporters would have been in her garden looking for her to come out, you know, baiting her almost. And the irony of all the all that was written and in the aftermath of her death. And I think there is certainly, I think, a period of reflection that could be done with subsequently.
I think, Katrina, what you said as well about her lack of consideration for how those courageous acts were going to affect her personally, she was quite extraordinary in that, because she saw herself, because having spoken to her a good few times, and I feel so lucky to have been in her company and to have been able to tell her to her face what she meant to Irish women, especially around the abortion thing. Because if you think about it, Sinead was the first public, very famous woman to speak. You kind of forget about it, but she did an interview, I think, with Marion Fanucane, where she sat down and talked about the abortion she had last week. I mean, this is way before we had any of these conversations. And she talked about why she did it and why it was important. But she didn't. She was a true artist in that sense, because she felt very keenly that to be an artist was to provoke, was to change, was to move, and that was almost the essence of her artistry.
Because after,
you know?
I read somewhere where, do you remember when she tore up the picture of the Pope in the States, and that afterwards she was back in her dressing room, and that whoever was her manager at the time, her agent, sort of came along and said, like, how the hell am I going to repair your career after whatever? And she basically said, kind of said, I don't care.
Yeah, she didn't care.
I made the point she wanted to do that.
And then she was happy in the rest of her thing. Obviously, monetary value, all those things that materially it affected her in a big way. But as an artist, she was much happier in that space where she didn't have to be the dancing, kind of put on the show for everyone. She could really get back to what she wanted to do.
And to be fair, I know I've written a memoir, but her memoir is the best memoir I've ever read.
It's amazing.
The way it's written so beautifully.
Yeah.
The words, the prose, it's remembrance. If there's one memoir I think you should read, it's remembrance.
And you know what? My mum has listened to it, which I want to do because she reads it. And my mum says it's gas because it's almost like Sinead is reading it for the first time.
Yes.
And she's kind of like, oh my God, some of it's
Did this really happen?
I might do that over Christmas,
That'd be nice.
Just one more thing before we kind of have a brief look ahead of the year. We're not able to cover every story of the year. It was a long year. Lots of things happened. But you wanted to talk, Katrina, about the women in Iceland on strike.
It's really interesting actually because Iceland ranks number one in terms of gender parity, and yet these women were out on strike, and the strike was on the exact same day as they had a strike in 1975 to, you know, talk about gender inequality and the pay gap specifically. And like, this is my bread and butter in terms of my work, is trying to ensure gender equality happens. But like, I just think in Ireland we need to do more. Like, we rank 11th in the world, but actually if you look at our gender pay gap, we're like 41st. So we're really bad in terms of the work parity piece. And I think it really needs to be something that we focus on. And companies, it's great that companies now have to report. So if you've a company of over 250 employees, you have to report. And there's a brilliant bot on Twitter that if you report, if you say anything about equality, it will take your gender pay gap and automatically tweet it. So it will criticise companies who claim to be equal who are not. And I would look at companies like OnPost has been actually fantastic in the last 3 years, one of the only big companies that have got complete parity. And they've done that because there's two things that they need to do. They need to have more women in leadership, be promoting more women, but be doing more for women who are in motherhoods and, you know, are having babies and making sure that we, you know, we squash this. It just makes women feel undervalued, completely undervalued. And so I really respect the women in Iceland. I respect them because they're actually number one. And they're still fighting for the fact that they haven't gone,
we've got that now, we're sorted. Yeah. What do you think, Alison?
Yeah, because it was one of the, I mean, this is a quote I saw a couple of times this year, and I say that the Icelandic PM, Katrin Jakob's daughter, she said that it's not acceptable that women around the world would have to wait 300 years for full equality. That's at the current, going at the current rate. Oof.
In Ireland, it's like 161 years.
Yeah.
So like we'd have to wait 161 years to get full gender equality.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's quite an extraordinary statistic. And for me, you're talking about looking forward. Like, this is, it's to do with, so much of it's to do with representation. Even though we're sitting here now, we're in a room with five people and four of them are female doing a broadcast. That is very unusual. So, it's also about making that an effort has to be, okay, this is a women's podcast, admittedly. Mm-hmm. But that if you make an effort in things, like, as Katrina said, with the gender pay gap, with OnPost getting women in senior positions, it does involve effort, and not just one-off effort.
No,
it has to be kind of sustained effort, and this is something that I have for looking forward. Well, I get into that now about next year.
So we're going to have
next year for an anorak like me. Next year is going to be very exciting because we have the prospect of, we've two referendums. We are going to have local in March, local and European elections in June, and the possibility of a general election. General election. So up to now, quotas, it had to be 30% of women on the ticket. That will move to 40%. And, you know, that there would be real financial penalty for parties if they were not to do that. But I do really have a concern about, I mean, we saw Jennifer Bray of this parish did magnificent work at the start of the year on what female politicians are facing, the threats, the stuff and so
on.
I mean, all the trolling, unbelievable, having to go to the guards in fear of their own safety, installing alarms, and that incredible line where a female politician was told to wear flat shoes in case she needed to make a quick getaway and not wear heels. And I'm a little concerned about them. There's always the danger that they just put in, can't reach the quota. They just put in a female candidate. So to say, look, we have one. My concern now is actually finding women who are either sane enough or mad enough to run.
Just to add to that, like, I've been asked to run by three different parties.
I'm not surprised.
I won't run particularly for that reason. I just couldn't take the abuse that women get. So look at what Helen McAtee goes through, separate from the fact that I may not agree with her politics, but the fact, the abuse she get just on her gender is just, I just don't think I could, I couldn't take that. Yeah. And I've had women in politics, the organisation, say to me, we can support you, we can do this. Yeah. I wouldn't put myself through it.
Can we run through a couple of other things just very quickly? So you mentioned the referendum on women in the home and the concept of the family happening in March, finally. Yeah. I never really actually thought it would actually happen. Yeah. I'm still not convinced, to be honest. But anyway, it's a good thing, I suppose, to get that terrible thing out of women by virtue of their place in the home, out of our constitution.
I tell you what, it's really good for two reasons. The first reason is the removing the women as the carer. But the second reason I think we're forgetting is actually the structure of family and family being based on marriage. It's now they're going to include word in that it's based on, now it's interpreted. So we just have to.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Enduring relationships is the language. So, but like lone parents,
an enduring relationship between 3 years, not
for
married.
Lone parents, particularly lone parents previous to this have not been recognised in the constitution. And Cherish or One Family have been working so hard for this. So it is an opportunity. We really need people to vote. We really need people to go out and take this seriously, especially with what's happening right now with the far right movement. Like, you know, ensuring that women are not chained to the sink is a really important piece of.
I believe we're still talking about that, but Alison, let's also talk about very briefly the Paris Olympics are happening. We have a load of female athletes, Kelly Harrington in the light welterweight division, Rasadat Adeleke 200 metres and 400 metres, Ellen Walsh 200 metres individual medley, and loads and loads more. It's great. It's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, I have a huge one in particular athletics fan in the house who is so looking forward to the Olympics, and I have to say I think Rashida Adeleke, who is originally from Tala, which isn't that far away from where we live, is, I just think she's fabulous. Yeah. She's such a superstar.
Yeah.
And you just get so excited at the idea that she's going to you know, that she's coming up in a race. And I guess even the fact that the Olympics are on in Europe will make it seem closer to home. There won't be the crazy time differences, all of that. And you have to imagine that the French will put on a good show. Oh, yeah, I think it's good. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah. So lots to look forward to in 2024. And I'm sure a lot of the stories that we've mentioned in this podcast, we'll be watching them and continuing, especially if we think about Palestine and Gaza and everything that's going on there, because that doesn't show any sign of being resolved, unfortunately, so far. But thank you so much for joining us, Katrina O'Sullivan and Alison O'Connor. Katrina and Alison, I'll see you loads in 2024 and look forward to that.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really hope you enjoyed that look back over 2023. Thanks very much to Alison O'Connor and to Katrina O'Sullivan. And if you enjoyed this episode and the podcast, please leave us a review or subscribe to the podcast, as it really makes a difference to us. The podcast is produced by Suzanne Brennan and by me, Roisin Ingle, with JJ Vernon on sound. Talk to us on social at IT Women's Podcast, or email us on the Women's Podcast at irishtimes.com. That's it from me. Have a happy new year, a peaceful 2024. We'll see you on the other side, and I'll talk to you next time.